falling below 58 to the dollar. BBC News.
Now on Radio 4, we begin a new series following a group of transgender patients pursuing treatment for gender dysphoria at the Charing Cross Gender Identity Clinic in order to become themselves. Today we meet Freddie, Blade and Mitchell, who were raised female and are seeking treatment as trans men.
I try not to look in the mirror because I don't like what I see. Because I feel a certain way and then I look in the mirror and there's this thing staring back. I feel as if I haven't been myself my entire life.
It wasn't about becoming a man. It wasn't about not being a woman. It was about just becoming me. I never was a woman. Never identified with that word. I don't really identify with the word man because it's like this kind of archetypal, breadwinning, alpha male type figure, and I'm not that. I am my brother's brother, and my sister's brother, and my parents' son. But those are all just identifiers to understand how I exist relative to other people. I'm just me.
The difficulty with being a member of staff here is that by some elements of the trans community, we consider to be conservative and gatekeeping. By the medical community, we are seen as being radicals. So we're seen as doing things that some doctors don't think should be available in the NHS, and I've been out there trying to demonstrate that this is a condition the same as any other condition and should be given the respect that it deserves and the treatment it deserves.
Becoming myself. Gender identity. Part 1. Trans men.
Hi, I'm Freddie. I'm 27 and I'm a journalist. Okay, so it's... oh, God, I don't even know how old I am. Probably about 8. My sister standing next to me is 6 and we're both standing outside a house that we lived in back then, and we're in sports kit with our tennis rackets and, like, little knobbly knees looking really dorky. And I'm wearing my Manu shirt. Photos of me when I'm a kid, well, the vast majority, I just feel like I look so much like a boy, like I don't really care. I didn't think I was a boy, but I think I thought I should have been. And I would talk quite openly about when I grow up, I'm going to have a sex change. And when I got to, like, female puberty, I was made aware that talking about having a sex change wasn't really on, but in a nice way as well. People reassured me, like my mum reassured me I would feel differently eventually. Like, I just had to wait and be patient, and one day I'd want to wear dresses and makeup, and I honestly sincerely believed her, and then it never happened. Because of the feeling of shame around talking about sex change and transsexuals, it was still a long time before I came to a realization that it was something I needed to deal with.
Hello.
Freddie was referred by his doctor to the Charing Cross Gender Identity Clinic in Hammersmith, London. It is the oldest and largest clinic of its kind in the world, established in 1966 to treat patients with gender identity issues. People from all over Britain are treated here.
Hello, Gender Clinic, can I help you?
We're dealing with people who have gender dysphoria.
Consultant psychiatrist Dr. James Barrett is the lead clinician.
Which is a sense of unhappiness at some discongruence between their own feeling of masculinity or femininity or perhaps gender neutrality or both, that is discongruent with their body or perhaps in some cases some other aspects of their life. It's not a mental illness and never has been. It's classified under mental disorders, something which has always been present but may not manifest itself immediately. You might find out about it later in life.
In short, we assess people who are going on to make some degree of, for want of a better phrase, sex change. Now, sex change is a bit of an old-fashioned term, but it's, I think people know what it means.
Dr. Stuart Lorimer, consultant psychiatrist and gender specialist.
We're mainly treating people with gender dysphoria because if you didn't have a degree of dysphoria, you probably would not be seeking the assistance of medics in this regard. Also, we're an NHS clinic, which means that what we do is not simply body modification. There has to be a justifiable need in order for the NHS to provide this treatment.
The Charing Cross doctor said you need to live fully 100% as male, as opposed to kind of male in your head and just cringing every time someone misgenders you. Yeah, that period of 6 months where I was not on hormones and having to come out to everyone was the worst. What do? Do you come out to all these strangers? Like the first thing or second thing you say is, I may look like a woman, but actually I'm a guy. So I had this idea in my head that I would just like escape to a desert island and start on testosterone therapy, then come back and not have to deal with any of that like awkward initial period. But eventually I realised that I could just come out on Facebook in one fell swoop, and I did that.
Anyone coming here as a new referral would tend to have a first appointment and a second appointment with two different clinicians. And I would tend to ask about early memories of gender dissonance, an awareness that how they perceived gender was different from how other people perceived gender. It's amazing how early that happens. 4 or 5, is, I would say, is typical, in that people become aware of their gender, that it's different from other people, and that also it's taboo. That this is something that they can't easily speak to other people about. So I'll ask about early memories, how people responded to puberty, both the physical and the social changes of puberty, and I'll move on to people's medical history, psychiatric history, what they do socially and occupationally, and importantly, future plans. And the two clinicians would get together and would come up with a plan that they would agree with their patient, which might involve psychotherapy, which might involve the taking of hormones, might involve surgeries of one sort or another. So it's about devising a package going forward.
Right, there we go. Take a seat. I'm Dr. C. I'm an endocrinologist, so I don't do any psychiatry. I just do the physical side of things. All right. So what's the ideal outcome for you?
Change as quickly as possible.
It's the 7th of November 2013, and Blade is at his first appointment at the Charing Cross Gender Identity Clinic with the endocrinologist, Dr. Leighton Seal.
I've met you, and I just go right back to the starter knife. Were you born at the right time, by the right way, as far as you know?
Yes.
And what age did you go through puberty?
13. I'm Bronya McCarthy, officially, and I'm 39. However, I will become Blade Tranter, 39. Can't change the age, only the name. It was my cousin, who was a month older than me. We used to have baths together, and I used to look at him in the bath and wonder why I wasn't like him. When you reach puberty, there's a huge separation between men and women. And that separation was awful for me, because I was going through changes into a woman. You know, it was bad enough being a girl, but changing into a woman was horrendous. When I realised that I was lonely and I wanted a relationship, that's what got me thinking, well, I don't want to be with a man, so the other option is to be with a woman. I thought, well, I can't be with a woman as I am, because it just feels wrong. I saw a documentary on TV, and I didn't realise that women could transition into men. So it was from that and realising how unhappy I've been all my life. That's what I wanted to do. So the next step for me was to see my doctor, who then referred me on to a psychologist, who then diagnosed me with gender dysphoria and referred me up to the clinic in London.
So there are a few things to think about with testosterone. Now, the first thing is the things you can expect. So most people find them as positives. So you'll find that your body hair will increase, your facial hair will increase, your body fat will redistribute. So you'll find that the fat comes off your hips, but if you're not careful, it ends up in your tummy.
Yeah.
The other thing that you'll notice is that your facial features become coarser. Quite quickly, people get red as male more easily than they did beforehand.
My name's Dr. Leighton Seal. I'm an endocrinologist, which is basically a hormone doctor here at the Gender Clinic at Charing Cross. When we're looking at treatment, there are three aims to the treatment. First of all, we take away the hormones of your birth gender. to stop that effect in the body. We then give the hormones of the desired gender to induce puberty of the desired gender. And then the third phase is after somebody's gone through surgery and they've had either their testicles or their ovaries removed. That has long-term health consequences. So we give hormone replacement to prevent those health consequences occur. So then if we're thinking about somebody who's born female transitioning to male, so a trans man, when you're on testosterone, you become more impulsive, your anger levels and your assertiveness goes up. In increasing the testosterone level from a female level to a male level, sex drive almost exclusively goes up. Now, you may think of that as being a positive. However, if sex constantly starts coming to the front of your brain, it can be difficult. And we need to warn people about that. And also we take a staged approach and we start with low doses of hormones and build them through. This mimics natural puberty. So in puberty, you don't suddenly get a dramatic rise in hormones. They slowly build up. And we do the same thing with the trans man. We start off a slightly lower dose and build our way through up to a more reasonable adult dose.
Being on testosterone therapy for life is a massive commitment. So I had to spend a lot of time thinking about that and getting my head around it.
Freddie again.
Within the first week, my appetite shot up. I was feeling hot and sweaty, and I didn't smell. It wasn't BO, but I just had this different kind of aura. And then started noticing if I sort of pinched my forearm, it wasn't like soft and a little bit sort of fatty. It was kind of rough and a little bit hairier, and my voice started to drop. I'm noticing more spots and I don't really know how to deal with it because I never had spots first time. And I'm conscious sometimes of sort of feeling and looking like a teenage boy.
Any other questions?
No, I was just going to say I have two sisters. I'm not in contact with either of them, but I actually bumped into one yesterday. I hadn't seen her for 3.5 years and she was on the train and I thought, I need to tell her. So I just said... Well, she said... So, I still hate you. We'll never get on.
You can never underestimate the amount of heartache somebody goes through before they get here. When somebody arrives at the clinic, they know they're in the process that may well cost them their family, may cost them their friends, may even cost them their job. And they have done a lot of soul searching by the time they get here.
The clinicians expect a patient to have lived in their preferred gender role for at least a year before anyone is referred for surgery. Although in reality, this process takes much longer.
Living in the opposite gender for a period of time before irrevocable things like surgery are done is so important because you need to redefine yourself in your new gender. Find out if you are happier there before we do anything irrevocable.
I'll definitely be happier as a man. It's what I've always wanted. I don't want a hairy chest. I don't want hairy legs. I don't want hairy arms. Don't want a beard. But I just want to be recognised as male.
Euston Station, the 15th of December, 2013. Mitchell has just had a follow-up appointment at the Gender Identity Clinic and is waiting for his train home.
I always felt like a little boy, and my dad taught me to shave in the mirror, and I think he just saw me as the youngest son, because he did all the things with me that he did with my brothers. I looked outside one way and felt inside another way, and at 8 and 9, it's very confusing to think, well, why do I look like them? Because I'm really like them. At sort of 15 and 16, the labels start coming out, don't they? So, you know, you're gay or you're a lesbian. Or, well, it's funny because I never considered myself to be a lesbian because I never saw myself as a female.
I remember when I first had this epiphany, the first step I took was to get a binder. Anyone who has breasts and doesn't want them basically can wear a binder because it flattens your chest. I ordered one of these and it came and it said on the website, like, don't worry, it'll be an unmarked package. And I was like, cool, that's, thank God for that, because I haven't told anyone yet. So I got it and I put it on, looked in the mirror, and I almost like fell over. For the first time, my reflection was my reflection that my brain expected to see. It's like, oh yeah, there you are. And I don't think I've ever gone a single day since that day without binding.
With trans men, the overwhelming majority want to have chest surgery as a first priority. So being rid of breast tissue is probably the next step, or one of the next steps, for near enough 100% of female-to-male transitioners.
I was never supposed to have breasts. Men don't have them. So for as far as I'm concerned, they're a part of my body that I shouldn't have and they shouldn't be there. It's not a choice that, oh, well, if I can't have it free, I'm not having it. It's got to be done as far as I'm concerned. So regardless of whether they would be funded or not by the NHS, they're coming off.
Mitchell has been referred by the Gender Identity Clinic for a double mastectomy with male chest reconstruction at St George's Hospital in London.
Mitchell Heath.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, Mitchell. Come on in.
It's the 5th of September, 2014, and Mitchell is attending his appointment with Catherine Milroy, his surgeon, 8 weeks after his operation.
Okay, this is your first clinic appointment after the surgery?
Yes.
Good, right. Well, I need to have a little look if that's all right. Are you reasonably pleased with how things are going?
I'm absolutely over the moon.
Good.
Yeah. Just have two little concerns, but I'm sure that they'll go in time.
Okay.
Because like I say, it's only been...
Early days.
It's only been a few weeks, so...
Put your hands on your hips for me. I'm Catherine Milroy, consultant plastic surgeon at St George's Hospital. So the procedure that Mitchell had was a bilateral mastectomy with nipple grafts for gender reaffirmation. So that involves removing all of the breast tissue and the skin over the top of it, removing the nipple and making it smaller, and then replacing it in a more male position, which is more lateral on the chest and slightly lower down. Ah, good. Now that's looking very nice. The nipples are doing very well, aren't they? And I was a bit worried about your scarring because you're redheaded and they're doing okay, aren't they?
And I'm moisturising twice a day.
All the pinkness will go eventually and they're not stretched too much, and that's what I'm really interested in.
I'm over the moon.
Pop your things back on again. One of the reasons I really love this surgery is that the patients tend to be very pleased with the results that they get. For a surgeon, there's nothing more rewarding than a patient being happy with what you've been able to achieve for them. I would say that the transgender patients get so much out of the surgery. Their quality of life is transformed. They can then get employment, they can get fit and healthy, where before they perhaps were worried about having a job, they were worried about taking part in sports. They can just live a happy, healthy life.
Who at 40 years old would put the body through this? But that's part of who I am and part of what I've gone through to live the life that I live. So I'm certainly not going to be embarrassed by my scars. They're a part of me. They're a part of what's given me the life that I have. So I'm not going to walk around and throw them in people's faces and go, look at this, I'm a trans man. But I'm certainly not going to be embarrassed by them. I've never lied to anybody about what I am, but I won't go out of my way to go, oh, hi, I'm Mitch, by the way, I wasn't born male. I won't draw attention to myself.
I hate the fact that I have breasts. Ugh. I hate saying it, but I also kind of hate the fact that I have to have surgery to remove them. You know, it's not the easiest answer to that issue, but I'm set and I'm ready for that now. I mean, it took a long time.
Freddie has chosen to pay to have his chest surgery performed by leading American specialist Dr. Charles Garamoni. He has flown to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with his mother.
Hello. Hey.
This is Freddie's audio diary, recorded 2 days before his operation, known as top surgery.
I've got my mum here. I asked her to come and talk a bit about how she feels about being here in Florida. So, mum...
Yes, hello.
Has being here sort of put your mind at rest, or...?
Yeah, it feels very appropriate that it's your mother that's with you, because I'm the person who gave birth to you, and I would not want to not be here when you're developing and evolving in this way.
Because I get the feeling that you're glad you're here, but that there's definitely a kind of bittersweet vibe, and so when I say things like, oh, I'm really excited, or when I kind of express my excitement, I'm worried that you don't like hearing that much, or like there's a hint of sadness.
I'm not sad. I think when you first told me, it was kind of mind-blowing and upsetting, I suppose, if I'm honest. I didn't want you to have difficulties in your life that were making you so unhappy. One of the things that it made me immediately think, of course, was, well, gosh, what are you going to do about it? Having top surgery was my thing that was most worrying for me. But I have come to terms with it, and I do realise that it's not the end of the world. It seems fine to me now. I think maybe that might be the thing, along with having testosterone and, you know, having that for a year now and going on having it, that you'll feel, you know, you can just then get on with your life and just be yourself.
There you go. Now I'm going to unwrap your chest. Okay. We're going to leave this off for a few hours.
It's the 21st of April, 2014, 5 days after Freddie's chest surgery. Dr. Garamoni is removing Freddie's dressings for the first time since his operation.
All right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks phenomenal. Okay?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Let's get your drains out, okay?
Yeah.
I stood up and went over to the mirror and it looked absolutely incredible. Like, I could not believe how normal and how looking in the mirror for the first time was like, that's it, it's done. Later that day, after having seen my chest for the first time, I went with one of the other guys staying in the house to the beach in Fort Lauderdale, and feeling the wind blow our shirts against our bare skin and remarking on how extraordinary the feeling was, and also a little bit unnerving because you feel naked, but once your brain kind of makes that leap and starts to learn that this is now the normal feeling, so get used to it. It's just like, wow, this is going to be amazing.
While Freddie is recovering from his chest surgery, Blade has delayed his treatment to sort out some concerns he has about the process of female-to-male transition.
I definitely want to be a man, but I'd like someone to wave a magic wand and to change immediately, but that's not going to happen. Things that I found out about the operations, they sound horrendous. I'm terrified. Absolutely terrified. And the one thing that I'm worried about is being stuck in the middle. Being half this, half that. You know, if you're looking for a relationship, people want to know if you're a man or a woman. And if you're half and half, that's going to put a lot of people off.
Over the years, there has been a steady rise in the numbers of referrals to gender identity clinics across the country. In fact, numbers have doubled in the last 5 years at Charing Cross, and they currently have 3,500 patients under their care, with 1,400 people waiting to be seen. And as Dr. Stuart Lorimer explains, the fastest growing patient group is young trans men.
If you look at the media coverage of trans men, that's much more recent than for trans women. We're aware of people like April Ashley, Caroline Cossey, as far back as the 60s and 70s, whereas trans men have had fewer role models as such, and there's been less coverage. It used to be the case within the clinic that whenever there was a documentary on female-to-male transition, we would, a few months later, see a sudden blip in the numbers of trans men being referred, simply because a lot of people had no idea that they could do this. And obviously there's the internet now, and when the internet rose to prominence, that hugely affected our referral rate. So, yeah, it's going up and up, and we are constantly expanding to try and catch up with it, usually a little bit after the event.
I have absolutely no doubt that for much of the younger patient groups, you know, the online community is very powerful, so they are learning from other people's experiences.
Consultant psychiatrist Dr. Sharmini Rajendran.
We have many more patients coming to us who are already undergoing the process of social transition. So they're not waiting for assessment. They are already, you know, partway through their transition, which, you know, is very interesting. So a lot of them come with changes of name. they would be transitioning the workplace, at university, at school. Obviously, there's also a small group that have maybe had kind of private sector. So I think it's quite an interesting change, again, from 10 years ago, where people were very, very much more earlier on in their journeys. We were getting people already in treatment, as it were.
There's been a kind of increasing set of pressure from patients who feel it's their particular right to be treated, which of course it is, but there hasn't been necessarily the same attitudinal change within the world of medicine more broadly.
Dr. James Barrett, lead clinician at the Charing Cross Gender Identity Clinic.
Not very many years ago, there was a survey done, I think, through Hospital Doctor, where they asked general practitioners whether the health service should pay for gender reassignment surgery. And 80% of general practitioners thought that the health service shouldn't be paying for anything of the sort or any kind of treatment.
I think doctors have lagged behind in terms of seeing this and owning this as our responsibility, in that doctors go into medicine not quite appreciating that this is a valid and extremely distressing condition that is a medical condition. It's not a lifestyle choice. It's not a hobby. It's not a fetish. And it's something that we as doctors are obliged to deal with.
Now that Mitchell and Freddie have successfully undergone chest surgery and are happy with the results, they are deciding on whether to have genital reconstruction surgery as a next step in their female-to-male transition.
I go back to see my endocrinologist again in January, and that's with the intention of discussing further surgery. Because they've said to me, give your body 18 months to 2 years after your chest surgery before you have your lower surgery. And at the moment, yes, I still want it. But in 6 months, I might feel that actually, yeah, this is enough for me, you know, I can live and be a happy man like this.
The majority of trans men actually don't go on to have genital surgery. It's a large chunk out of one's life. It's a big commitment to several surgical procedures. I've heard a variety of sentiments along these lines, including, I don't need a penis to be a man. And at the other extreme, there are people saying, I don't feel I can be a man without a penis. So it really is very individual whether or not they have genital surgery.
I guess I'm a little bit more open to the idea. Having had top surgery, I feel a little bit more open-minded about surgery in general and not so shameful about it. And I feel freer to like make decisions based on what I feel is best for me as opposed to what society thinks is normal.
After delaying his treatment for a year, Blade has now decided to go ahead with his female-to-male transition and is starting testosterone therapy.
When I look at my passport and it says born 74, I just think, no, it can't be right. That can't be right because I haven't started my life yet. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
Becoming Myself, Gender Identity was produced by Melissa Fitzgerald. The narrator was Adjoa Ando, and it was a Blakeway production for BBC Radio 4. Incidentally, there's more information and support for anyone affected by gender dysphoria on the Becoming Myself programme page of the Radio 4 website.
The BBC Radio 4 St Martin in the Fields Christmas Appeal.
When I first arrived here, I hadn't had a wash for 2 weeks. I hadn't eaten for a few days.
£5 funds 2 hot meals.
I came here, had a shower and I took something to eat. Now once that happened, I was able then to think a bit more clearly about my life. They enabled me to see that I can have some control over my future, over my own destiny.
You can donate to the Radio 4 Christmas Appeal by calling 0800 082 8284. Calls are free for most landlines, some networks and mobile operators will charge.